is the latest episode of the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. My name is Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to this show wherever you found it, because that's how we get to do what we do. As we kind of zoom around Montana and having these conversations with different folks, we are joined this week by Kit and Trevor Johnson from Kit's Tackle. And fellas, how are you?
We're doing great.
Snow's melting.
Yeah.
You getting the itch?
Getting the itch to get out. I drove out to the gates yesterday and ice is gone, ramps open.
Really?
A few boats were on water.
Really?
You got rid of my first question right off the bat. I just wanted to know if the water was open out there. Save me a drive.
I'm coming off this damn back surgery and I've been laid up for so long. When I went into the OR, people were ice fishing.
Yeah.
And by the time I get back to work, all of a sudden there are boats out there in the same body of water.
Yeah, it used to be I was very rarely not the first boat on the gates of the mountains, but with time, you know, you're not quite as mad at them as you used to be.
So. You were also the first person to jump into the water at the gates of the mountains. I've seen videos. I don't want
to. We had to start it off with this, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I knew that was going to.
I think I had a bright red thong on.
I believe you did.
Well, style points.
On Christmas Day?
Yeah, it was a Christmas little exercise.
It was festive.
Yeah.
You have a conversation with that? Is that a committee meeting, or are you just like, you know what, hold my beer. I'm going to do this.
We'll just leave it with hold my beer. We did. Yeah.
It's a unique marketing department they have at Kit's Tackle, for sure.
Take it either way.
Now, for people that don't know, you guys started this, and when I say you guys, it was you, Kit, right? Your name's on the marquee.
Yeah, many, many years ago.
I was going to say, if I understand it right, back in the 70s.
Yeah,
it started in on this.
And it started out fairly small. I worked full-time in the corporate world, and so you kept it small because you only had so much time, and I enjoyed fishing. Trevor comes along and wanted to grow this company, and I'll let him tell that little part of the story. So.
Yeah, it's just quick, guys, but it was always a dream, but sometimes bringing a dream to fruition is a little harder than just making it happen. You know, it's always a dream. Wasn't sure about it, went to college, loved the outdoors, thought I'd start off in wildlife biology, got through my regular classes, got into my core classes, cellular and molecular biology. Was like hitting a brick wall, man. It took all my time away from the outdoors just to pass those classes. So kind of generically switched over to the School of Business and Administration, and it was great. The teachers would ask, hey, does anybody have like an idea of what they want to do? And I'd be like, sure, me. And I'd tell them kind of the layout of Kit's Tackle. So we actually got to use that platform a lot in those college courses. So it was pretty beneficial and pretty cool. They helped me build the first website, and the sky's been the limit, and we've built this thing tenfold since then.
You might be the only person in modernity that used their college the right way. Everybody else, I'm walking around with an electrical engineering technology degree, couldn't be more worthless.
I was going to say he's the only college kid who was thinking about fishing and using it as a positive during class as opposed to a negative.
How about I workshop my prof into this idea to build my business plan? That's brilliant.
Yeah. And it worked out good. I mean, he came with fresh ideas and a lot of knowledge, and like you said, we've grown this thing tremendously, and you start out the business and you go secure a bunch of wholesale to cover your fixed costs, and then you make the website, and that's at retail. And we have flipped that schematic. When you first start, you have more wholesale than retail, and now we flipped it to where the retail market is better than wholesale.
That's good. And you guys are in a couple of areas that I think can be a cautionary tale for people. One of them is turning something you love into a business, because in a lot of cases it becomes work.
Yeah.
And then the second part is, of course, working with family, which can also have mixed results, as a lot of people could tell. But you've done it successfully on both parts.
And we've been very close our entire life. I mean, I had a father who took me to the outdoors at a very young age, and it just gets in your heart and never goes away. In fact, I'm a little over 70 years old right now, and I could walk to the first spot on Snowshoe Creek where I caught my first fish with my father's instructions on my own at about age 5. And so it just, that got in my heart, and I've just loved it ever since. So
that passion for fishing, I have it. I've had it since, you know, when I was a kid. I was infatuated with it, and I completely understand it. I really do. When people say that's something that you're remembering your first fish, remembering those moments. I remember as a kid, you know, we raced cars all summer long, but fishing was the thing I liked the most. I remember hoping and someday I would live in a town where I could fish in town. That was my goal in life.
Amen.
Just being able to have a fishing water, because I lived in Billings, and it was a long ways to the river from where we lived, and it wasn't that great in the river at that time anyway, and I just wanted somewhere that I could fish every day. That's all I wanted, and we'd drive through Livingston, and we'd drive through some of these small towns in Montana, and I thought, man, I just want to live here, and that was the only reason, was that passion for fishing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you mentioned it right, though, the whole, especially working with family, you know, you don't always see behind the scenes, behind closed doors, right? You see a post on social media, and it's like, oh, man, look at those guys smiling. You know,
how many Thanksgivings is this ruined?
Right. We've been able to make that work pretty well. But, I mean, there's been some ups and downs, but it's kept it good. And in the long run, it actually makes you closer. But the coolest thing was, he's old school, I'm new school. I'm a little bit more about taking risks.
A lot of red thongs in your closet?
Right.
Not
right.
Too many.
No, I didn't figure.
I got a whole box full of them.
Trevor lives outside the box.
So. Yes, he does.
But it's good to have both sides of that. But I don't get too carried away, and he doesn't stay too conservative. So, and again, you know, even the days that we don't see eye to eye, which that's long past now. It's just when we were growing this thing. But ultimately, in the end, like I said, it makes you a lot closer. And it's people tell me all the time how fortunate I am to have that relationship with my father. And I don't even realize it, right?
Oh, it's true.
It's just dad.
It's 100%.
It's my best friend, right? I don't even think about it. But I hear that all the time. Like, dude, you're so lucky. You know, and to me, it's like, well, that's just my best. That's dad. You know.
Well, and that's funny because, you know, my son is 12.
Right.
And he moved here when he was 5, and I'm going through this thing. You know, we got here in 2016. I'm trying to learn the outdoor stuff here in Montana, right? I'm learning the hunting. I'm learning the hiking. I'm learning the fishing, the rivers, and trying to bring him along. When I don't know shit, you know, it's like, well, where do we go for the fish? I'm like, dude, I just got here. Like, I don't know either.
That's awesome.
And, you know, and so it's a hugely special thing because with the kids, if you can't show them some success, if you can't show them that you know what you're doing, if you can't go out there and, you know, kids want to catch fish.
Right.
You know, you can tell them all you want about, well, it's about the day we had. It's like, yeah, well, the day we had, we didn't catch any fish. You know, and so finding those things and having that to share between you guys is incredibly important because it's something that it occupies a lot of my brain.
Right.
With my kid is trying to make sure that, you know, I game the system as much as I can to where we can go out. I've gone out fishing with him. My kid caught so many fish, he got bored catching fish. I was just snagging up lines and throwing my rod back in the truck. I'm like, I'll watch the kid catch fish. Apparently, he's good at it. He's got a bobber and a worm. I'm out here trying to make a fly rod work like an idiot. I'm envious of your situation because you guys have made that work.
The time in the outdoors is quality time. And Trevor and I have had so many adventures one-on-one. When he was 5 years old, I started taking him elk hunting, and by the time he was 12, I had harvested 7 branch antler bulls with him beside me. The first year he became legal.
Scott, can I go hunting with your kid?
Well, oh, I remember your bull, Scott. Yeah.
Scott's going to leave.
But by the time Trevor was 12, and back then you had to be 12 to hunt, we were in the woods, and we do everything kind of extreme, but we're in the woods about 2 hours. The elk were bugling. I took him to within about 300 yards of this herd of elk and sent him in alone, and he went in and harvested his first branch antlered bull elk by himself.
At age 12, Scott.
At age 12.
I heard it the first time.
And by now, we're fortunate. We've shared so much in Montana, but I've actually harvested 49 branch antler bull elk, 48 on
public. Okay, now I'm Scott's only 49 out. Behind you.
48 on public ground.
I mean, Scott's been hunting for 49 years.
Yeah.
So that's true.
Same difference. But to add to that, that elk kind of, you know, he threw himself in the pot. He didn't mention it was bugling, right? This is opening day of rifle, like a national forest, public land. They don't bugle on opening day of, you know.
Well, that's how he got hit. Yeah.
So we're headed into a totally different area, and this thing pipes off. So we went right to him, but, you know, just neither here nor there.
That almost cost us our working relationship. At my first opening morning, I went out by myself. Elk bugled, sun came up, there he was, shot him, sent Scott a picture, he called me a bunch of things I can't repeat.
You can still smell the Michigan on him, and he already had a bull down.
It seemed so easy, right?
It really did. It's the last one I got, by the way. But But yeah, that was those are the kinds of things, and I think Montana is unique in a lot of regards. With some place, Alaska, Wyoming, there are some other states where you can do that, where yes. there is the public land access. You can, I tell people all the time, they're like, "What's Montana like?" I'm like, "It'll however hard you want to go." How hard do you want to? You want to go back in the yep. bob? You want to go back 25 miles? You yep. can do it.
That's a great way to put
it. It's sitting yep. there. It's, you know, or do you want to road hunt up near right. White Sulphur? Because you can do that too.
Right.
You know, and somebody's going to tell you one's better than the other, but you can do whatever you want. And there just aren't a lot of places like that.
No. And Trevor, he was so infatuated with the outdoors, became extremely extreme. I mean, he would do lots of 20-mile turnarounds in a day, leave the car at 3 in the morning, and get back at 10 at night. And so, I mean, he was just avid chasing elk.
You never know? Never did me that much good, but it was through a lot of adventure.
And keep you skinny.
But just one real quick side story, kind of like how Dad mentioned the importance of the outdoors. Well, you know, you talked about getting the elk bugling on your first time yeah. out. Dad's talked about, 49 bulls and this and that. So ultimately the goal is to kill that bull elk, right? But if that's the only thing you find when you're out there, I think you're never going to find success. You'll never find what you're looking for. Even with all the elk I've killed, all the fish I've caught, one of the neatest experiences I ever had in the woods, I was bow hunting and I was trying tree stand hunting for a year. And I really have a hard time. I'm not a good glasser. I can't sit still. I just have to go. So I forced myself to try to tree stand hunt. And I'm sitting in this tree stand. And the first 5 minutes, this bull elk comes down the trail. He's coming down and the wind switched. And about 20 yards before I had a shot, he blew out of there. So I sat there the whole rest of the day, nothing. Right before dark, there was a squirrel bombing around in the bushes down there. And this red-tailed hawk just came out of nowhere and hit those bushes going 100 miles an hour. Yep. And it just sounded like a cat fight in there. And the hawk comes out without the squirrel, feathers all ruffled up, and that squirrel, I see him bolt away. And that hawk flies up and lands about 20 yards from me in a tree. And I look over, he doesn't know I'm there. I'm in full camo. Mm-hmm. So you guys can't see me, but I'd stick my finger up and I have Sitka camo. So I have a camo glove on and I started wiggling my finger around. And that hawk was like, thunk. I mean, right. He just hooked on me like a lightning bolt. So I kept wiggling that finger, and he took off at me 100 miles an hour out of that tree, and he got about 3 feet from me in that tree stand, and I jumped up and was like, oh! And he was like, oh! Spread his wings, and he went and flew and landed in that tree, and he watched me till dark. But
That's why I've got 9 fingers.
And dirty underwear.
But kind of what he's telling you is that as humans, we're all dreamers. I mean, if we're hunting elk, we're dreaming about bull elk or white-tailed giant whiteys or big mule deer. But every time you go to the outdoors, Mother Nature, if you're observant, will hand you something you didn't go there to seek that's far more important than the harvest of a trophy animal. And I mean, that's just one example. You will never forget that incident. Another one, same area where he was tree standing one morning. We're in the dark about 2 hours. We're like 5 hours from the car and we're going to eat lunch. And we sit on this very steep, maybe 15-acre park. And all camoed up, camel paint back then on our faces even. And we each had a rock. And I told Trevor, why don't you blow the bugle just before we eat and see what happens? And so he blows the bugle. We're eating our sandwich, and across this park came a giant male wolverine. And he ran up to within that's about 35 yards
awesome.
Of us. And he's looking all over. He doesn't see us. We're froze. And he looked and looked and looked. He turned and ran about 10 yards and jumped up on a 50-inch fir tree that had blown over on the stump of it and had a higher viewpoint. Looked around, nothing. Turned and ran down that tree and jumped into the forest. But it gives me goosebumps to this moment.
Yeah,
it's one of those moments we didn't go there to seek, but I will remember that more than any elk we would have harvested that day. So
I feel like we're in Scott's kitchen. You could probably tell all the stories about things.
That's
you
all
saw
I got. When, that's really it's the only thing I got is sunsets and squirrels. I'm really good at those stories.
But I'll just add one note about fishing and hunting too, because we're fond of both. But the older I get, the beauty to fishing for me is that you can catch a 10 or 12 year old fish, admire it, take a quick picture and put her back in. And we tell people that when you do that, there's two happy hearts. your heart is happy because you caught your quarry, and you know that fish is happy as it splashes water in your face with that tail as it swims off. So,
and you guys get to see this all the time in guiding people, and you guys, I know you do a lot of kids, you do a lot of first-time anglers, you do a lot of first-time visitors to the state. You get to see, you know, anybody who's ever taken a kid hunting or fishing and seen that first fish, that first buck, you'll get just as much joy out of it, if not more. Mm-hmm. And you get to do it all the time, and to find a way to renew that and renew it, because I've done it with my boys, and I've seen it in the eyes of my daughter, and those things are just, you know, that's really something fresh that you get every single time. So being able to replicate that by taking the kids out you get to take, who are not even yours, still the joy is there every single time. And even adults who get to go out and do it for the first time, that's something that I imagine is just the high point of your job.
And that it really is. To me, I guide. A lot of people guide just for the revenue, but it's to share my passion for the state of Montana. I've lived in and been everywhere in this state and done so much. And to be able to share that with people that have not had those experiences, it makes their day. You can have a tough day of fishing, but, you know, share the state of Montana and all its glory with a person, and they're just as happy as if they caught 40 fish that day.
Well, it's something with my kids. I think about it because they're growing up here, and I'm like, don't forget, people pay just to come here.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Right. Like, this is a destination. They're taking a vacation just to come here and amble around to all of this stuff that you can't be bothered by, like those mountains and that sunset and that lake and that river and, you know, the deer in the yard and everything else. Like, this is a place that people spend good, hard-earned money just to see.
Yeah,
so they can tell other people they saw it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't think any of us take it for granted. We know what we have here, but it's all we know.
Sure.
You know, so for us, it's kind of just home. But
spend a couple of years in Nebraska. I promise it'll refocus you.
But Scott had made a great point about, you know, getting kids out for the first time or their first successful experience, or even grownups. When I first started this whole guiding thing, outfitting, I thought, like, okay, hardcore walleye guys, right? You know, like, I only want to take professionals. And I found out real fast, yeah, I enjoy that. But nothing brings me more joy. My favorite trips are when kids or people that are not familiar with fishing come with me. I mean, yes, there's worms flying everywhere and hooks flying past my eyeballs and the whole nine yards.
Right.
Soda pops getting kicked over. But really, those are the funnest trips, because just like Scott said, the joy that brings, you know, for me, it's just another day of fishing. But you get to see that, and for them, that's so much more. So it's a very, very rewarding concept.
And taking people out like you do all of it, you know, I imagine there's some grind, a little bit of grind to turn, like I said, turning something you love into a job. But you're on guide day 50 of your summer, something mm-hmm. like that, and you get a group showing up with a little kid, and you go, my goal today is get that kid on a fish.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That is goal number one. And if the parents are like, my goal of the day is get that kid on a fish, you know what you got to do, and that's the moment you're looking for. And then that day becomes something different.
Right. It's kind of a reset. It goes a long ways. It's awesome.
Well, and the other side of that, though, and this is what I always think about with the, especially with the outfitters on the water. When my father-in-law passed away, I inherited a boat. I've spent a lot of time on my buddy's boats. I got a buddy that fishes out of Alaska. I've been up to Sitka 4 times out on the ocean. Awesome. He's got a big boat. It gets real small when somebody's in a bad mood. Like, if somebody right. on that boat is grumpy, that thing is, you're on a bobber, and you can't get away from each other.
Yeah.
And if you're an outfitter, you don't know who you're, it's like a Tinder date. You don't know what you're going to get. You're waiting for picture number 2. They show up, their picture number 4. You're like, damn it.
And she's got a beard.
Exactly. Like, that is, there were some filters used on this application, and now you're pot committed to an afternoon on a boat with somebody you want to drown. Right. So that's the other thing I think about, is how small the boats I've been on with people I know.
Right.
And it only takes one guy bringing his buddy.
Yeah.
Who's a jackass.
Yep. Nope. Like, you're exactly right. And, you know, that's probably one of my most common questions is, you know, how do you deal with those type of people? And I'm the kind of person that I love everybody. I don't dislike.
You'd have to.
I don't dislike anybody. I can make anything work. But you would, believe it or not, if you just tell people to come out with a good attitude, and you're in a good mood and have a good attitude, I'd say out of hundreds of trips, I've only had one trip that was trying.
Wow. That's a pretty good percentage.
Pretty incredible.
It is.
And I think it's attitude on both parts. I mean, people are coming here and they want to experience Montana. And going back to what I said earlier, if you share your passion with this state and it comes from the heart, they know they're in a good vessel. And even if fishing is tough, you can keep the day going by just sharing. We fish the Gates of the Mountains an awful lot, and there's so much history there with Lewis and Clark, and there's all the bald eagles flying by, mm-hmm. and there's one big old male bald eagle that loves to harass the coots. He doesn't really eat them, but two or three times a day, he'll come down on a flock of 300 or 400 coots and just hover above them, and they all scurry and squawk, and he flies off, and you know he's smiling, you know. And
right.
But it's stuff like that that just makes the day go by. And
there's a lot to see out there. If you're not catching any fish, there's a lot to point out.
Yeah, right. And there's a lot. But most people are just really good. They're coming here to have fun, and you put them on some fish, and the fish are quality. And one thing about Trevor and I, we're multi-species angler, which there's not a lot of guides that are like that. So we're well-versed with a spinning rod, well-versed with a fly rod. I've tied flies since age 11 and almost every day of my life. Just some trivia, I've tied tied flies with Pat Barnes, who the Missouri River chapter of Trout Unlimited is named after, in his basement with he and his wife Sig. I've tied flies one-on-one with Al Troth, some high-powered hitters.
Right.
Tied flies with Jack Gardside one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of history with fly tying, and I love it. It's probably the second most important passion to me.
Well, there's a step from going using equipment and then creating your equipment. Fly tires do it. Probably it's one of the most common ones. To do it with walleye is also something we've seen with friends of ours, and that's a different level to it, is to go and say, you know what? I'm going to start making the stuff I fish with as a walleye fisherman. That's mm-hmm. what you guys have done and created the brand out of it. But you've also created something recognizable. When you see it, you know what a Kitts jig is. Even with the new colors you guys come out with on a regular basis. But how did that aspect of it go from fly tying to creating your own jigs?
I guess in the early 70s, I've always jig fished. I had a good friend who lives here in Helena. His name is Bill Stevenson. He's maybe 7 or 8 years older than I am. And he handed me the first Marabou jig. And I started tying them and improving on what he handed me. And we caught a lot of big fish back then. So we were well-known anglers for targeting giant brown trout and people that undertone whisper. We're fairly humble and never shared a lot of info back then, but people hear about it. So people would come up to you and ask you for jigs, and so you'd provide them with some jigs. I've handed out hundreds of jigs on the shore just for free. You know, mm-hmm. it's good. They would have success, and so they started drove the business for us. And I have a relationship of almost 50 years with Capital Sporting Goods here in Helena, so they've carried our products since the early 70s.
And then, like you said, Scott, it kind of when I came into it, and it's funny. Not all passions get handed down. Like, you know, obviously Dad, he's a master fly tier. I couldn't tie a fly if I had to. I think the last fly I tied is when I was 11. I tied a woolly bugger that I still have that, mm-hmm. you know, I just, it wasn't one of my passions. I want to just, Dad, tie me a fly. I want to go fishing.
Right.
You know, but the jig side of things, when we kept pushing that, not only was it a successful product, it kind of came right about the time social media started. It was like 2005, 2006 when we were really making this push to grow this thing. And I kind of jumped on Facebook right when it was getting started. So it's created like you said, a brand, almost like a cult-like following from the beginning. You know, not just using a Kitts jig. You're part of this like community, right? This aura, you know. And I really feel like that has been huge in growing it as well. Like this community feel, like you're part of it. And yeah, it's grown tremendously since then. It's been incredible. The glass minnow, that was a funny one. It was just a special type of material we had made for fly tying, and Dad had an idea to put it on a jig, and we saw it in the water and we're like, holy cow, we got to try this. And it just became phenomenal. And the reason we call it a glass minnow, we get this asked all the time. People are like, well, dude, if that's glass, isn't it going to break? Mm-hmm. there's no glass in the product. It's a hollow microfilament fiber that is on the product, on the jig. So why we call it the glass minnow, as you like glass, is there's a pane. There's something there, but you can see through it. Mm-hmm. And that's very similar to the material on this product because it's there, but you can see through it. It has that transparency of a juvenile bait fish. So incredible product. It's just been a lot of fun to get to do it together.
And I remember the first day I had tied some of these up, and we went out below Canyon Ferry to test them. And I'm a marabou guy. I love marabou. And we were trout fishing, and I'm going to kick his butt on marabou. And he puts on his glass minnow I tied, and he had me like 15 to 1. And it was like, whoa, this, we're on to something.
It's got to work. Yeah. And it works.
Well, yeah, and you guys must have had a handful of those moments where, whether you knew it or not, you get into something like, uh-oh. I'm catching all kinds of fish on these.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it was hindsight. You don't realize it. You're doing R&D at the time. But right. we didn't talk about like, hey, let's go test these today and do R&D. Like, we're specifically testing these. We just went fishing. And that's kind of how we've always been, you know. But very, very apparent on the water. Always paying attention. Just always trying to grow. You never stop learning, you know.
Just innovative. It's... When I go to the water with my fly fishing clients and my fly box, I personally know that I have the best flies on water. I'm not a static tire. I'm always improving and always doing R&D with different products. But I go there with a sense that I have the best flies of everyone on water.
Me too.
And it makes a ton of difference. just a side note on the glass.
I'm robbing his box at the time. Right?
And that's fine. I mean, I tie all the time. But in 2012, we had developed the glass minnow and we're selling some, but we developed the perch. It was a barred perch imitation. And fish hadn't seen it. No one had seen it. And we fished the Canyon Ferry Walleye Tournament with that. And that year we did win the Canyon Ferry Walleye Festival on that jig. And it was the first time any fish in Canyon Ferry Reservoir had seen that product. And it was just amazing with that jig.
I don't know if you guys have seen the yellow perch, but, and I'm not just saying this because it's our product, but like when you put that thing in the water and you twitch your rod tip and make it move, it looks more like a yellow perch than a yellow perch. Like it's pretty awesome. But yeah, that really helped kick it off too. The Canyon Ferry Walleye Festival, grand scale of things, it's not huge. Local here in Montana, it is a very large tournament. It's our biggest tournament. And as a father and son, getting to fish that, we had a great pre-fish. We fished day one. Again, sorry guys, we're going back to 2012, but this just was a cool milestone for us. Had a great day one. We were in second place. I'll never forget, we were standing in the crowd, and the gentleman that was in first place had caught, you're allowed 5 fish. And he had caught 4 little ones and 1 great big, like 34 incher or something. Mm. And I heard the people in the crowd, you know, oh man, who are those guys? They can't, there's no way they're going to catch so-and-so. And I'm looking at the board and I'm like, 3-pounder, 3-pounder, you know, 7-pounder, 9-pounder. And I'm like, we've got this guy demolished. You know, he got lucky and caught 1 big one and 4 little ones. So we go back to our spot the next day, kind of giddy, and it's noon. We got to be off the water by 2. And the day one was phenomenal. Noon, and we had caught 1 fish, and they have to be 14 inch to measure. And this thing was 13 3/4. And it was like, so we're sitting with 0 with 2 hours left. And it's like, oh man, like we had this. So we decided to run way north. We pulled into a windswept shoreline, caught 2 real nice fish. Then we had it back. It's like, this is awesome. Like, we don't know if we're going to win, but we caught fish. We're back in this thing. And we run back to where we had fished day one. We're making a pass along. We got like 10 minutes to go. It's starting to get really windy. As you guys know, Canyon Ferry can get pretty snotty.
Yep.
And I pitch in and I felt something and I set it and my line just took off up the bank. So I thought I had snagged a carp or hooked a carp. So I told Dad, I'm like, nah, just keep fishing. And I'm fighting, kind of horsing this thing in, you know, and sooner or later I got right below the boat. So I tell Dad, I'm like, yeah, you probably better grab the net, Dad, just in case. And so we look down there and the glass minnows are real flashy in the water. And I can see that glass minnow flashing around down there. And I'm looking for that big familiar white tail on the walleye, and I'm looking, I don't see it. And then about 6 inches past where I was looking, I see that white tail flash.
Oh,
and
boy.
And she finally came up and hit the net, and it was right on 30 inches.
Whew.
And that secured the tournament for us. But it was pretty awesome to get to do that as a father and son, but also on the development of our new product. It just it was all meant to be. It was awesome.
Well, it's good marketing for you.
I was going to say, more product development should involve, I don't know, we went fishing.
Right. Right. But when you win
have those meetings,
your marketing goes up. It's obviously going to put you into the, especially if the guys were there.
Right.
That's an important fan base or customer base.
Right.
But also, if you go out and catch a state record, Trevor, that's going to get you a good marketing as well.
Right. Because
that goes crazy. And that's something you did, what, 2 years ago?
Yep.
Two summers ago?
Yep.
Or was that spring?
It was a springtime fish, yeah. And, you know, with that, I tell people it was, and honest truth, it was a lucky cast.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be there. I mean, it was just crazy that I happened to be the one that made that lucky cast.
I would tell this story differently. I would. There wouldn't be nothing lucky about it. But
the way I tell the
you
story.
You grind like I grind. This is how it works.
The way I tell the story is we've caught hundreds of big fish. And this fish was just a little bigger than the rest.
Yeah,
and
you guys are both
the way I look at it. I mean, we've caught so many 30-inch walleyes that this one was just bigger. It was just.
Did you know it was a state record when you had it to the boat, or did you have a feeling like it's got to be close?
No, to be honest with you, it was the most confusing fish I've ever seen. We fished the Columbia River since early 2000s. For people that don't know, the Columbia River produces huge walleye. The state record out there in Washington is 20.6 pounds.
Hmm.
We've caught them up to 17.3, I believe, on the Columbia. So we've seen fish of that caliber, but they've always been proportional, right? So, like, you know, you get a 33.5-incher pre-spawn, meaning they're full of eggs. You know, she might weigh 15.5, she might weigh 17.5. Generally, walleye are pretty proportional. This fish was actually only 32.5 inches long, but it was the girthiest thing we've ever seen. So even when it came up, it looked big, but I thought, you know, just a real big one, 13-14 pounds. Even in the net, you know, it looked big, but it's when it got set on the gunwale of the boat, so when it's laying on its side, how far up it was, how girthy it was. It was like it was big around as an NBA basketball. And to be honest with you, even of seeing hundreds of big walleye, I did not know if that fish was 14 pounds or 24 pounds. It was just the most, it just was totally disproportionate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what some of those, I mentioned I'd been up at Sitka,
mm-hmm.
the big salmon they used to catch. They don't catch as many anymore, but mm-hmm. back in the 80s, it was that thickness.
Right.
Like, they only get so long. And then you see them at the Sitka airport up there in Alaska, and then you look at them and they're a foot wide.
Yeah.
How does that even work?
Right. Right.
It's like a fence post, right, you know, swimming through the water. So they get, I've never seen a walleye like that, though.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it was incredible.
Now, your phone had to go crazy because I saw it everywhere, and I'm not you.
Right.
It was everywhere.
Yeah. It went pretty crazy. But just like you said, you know, we put that one picture on Facebook, but since then, we've kept it pretty humble. Never used that as marketing or, you know, hey, come catch a state record with us.
He actually had writers wanted to fly across the country from the East Coast to interview for that, and we declined all.
Hmm.
A couple of reasons is you could incite a lot of extra pressure on a waterway if you exploit it across the whole nation. And so we're kind of careful with that a little bit because we do respect what we have here. And
mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're fairly humble, but we've changed. When I was younger, I didn't share a lot. People knew what you were doing. But when we started to grow this, we used to do all sorts of seminars. And we became sharers, and we've taken a little bit of grief for sharing.
I would imagine.
But the way I view, I would be much more sensitive to sharing hunting information than fishing information, because we let all these big fish go, and we hope that most people let the big females go. They're the ones that are going to rejuvenate your population. And so I like to see people go to the water, and the smiles we talked about earlier today.
Sure.
I love to see that on the water. And so if somebody will come up and ask, I'll share with them what we're doing. And it's amazing how few people will come up and ask.
Well, in like location wise, you can't market these days without having pictures of fish.
Right.
You can't market well without having social media. If there's a background, people are going to know where it is.
Yeah.
And so you really can't get around it. I've seen people criticized for that in many different ways, mm-hmm. but you guys are also running a business. I think it's an important part of it. But with hunting, it's a little different. Like if you give away a landmark, mm-hmm. Man, you're not only going to risk the possibility of people coming, you're going to be so harshly criticized yes. for risking the possibility right. that it's anti-marketing. It works the other way.
That's
for
correct.
You.
That's correct.
So right. I completely understand that. The general area where you guys fish is obviously no secret.
Right, right. No, and like Dad said, we've always been sharers, and I can't tell you how many times somebody will come back to me like, holy crap, dude, it worked. What you told me was actually real. I'm like, well, yeah. You know? Yeah. It's just, I think people get so used to it these days of getting sent on a horse chase, you know?
Right.
But no, we love to share, and there's enough water. You know, if I see somebody that I've guided before or somebody I've helped out in a general area, I mean, you've got 100 more areas to go fish. You still got to go mm-hmm. catch them. You know, I feel very blessed that I've had the success that I've had. I feel like the best thing for me to do is to pass that on. And, just because it feels good. And I want other people to have success too. So, but like you said, Scott, there's definitely two sides to that. We do definitely get some criticism for that, but.
You can't put out a picture or video these days without getting criticism from somebody who has some right. issue with something you're doing.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just unbelievable.
And you know what? That's okay. You just, yeah. you have to get a little bit of rhino skin, and you can't let that get to you too much or it will eat you up. You know, you just do your best out there and try to be best and go from there.
Well, and that, you know, that's my I guess my next question is how you navigate in what is, you know, Montana's the biggest small town in the country. Everybody knows everybody. You don't need to get to 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You can usually do it in 3. And there's this weird thing. You already talked about getting the kids out, how important that is. The next generation of hunters and fishermen, states all over the country are struggling because people aren't buying hunting licenses anymore. They're just not doing it.
There's a lot of interference with getting kids to the water now that when I grew up and Trevor grew up, wasn't there. And I mean, you now have the youth athletic programs that consume yeah. all weekends,
club teams
for the 4 and
5 year
old kids. And mm-hmm. back in the day when Trevor was 4 or 5, they didn't have that. And so you went to the woods with them, you know,
yeah.
if you're a patient father, you took them and got to see that first smile of that first fish. And in fact, by the time Trevor was 12, I'd handed him so many 10 pound walleyes. He had caught more 10 pound walleyes than most adults will ever catch in their lifetime. But that's how they learn. You know, you hand them a rod with a 30 inch fish on it, they have to land it. And you just become really good at what you do when you do that.
And it's funny, just a tidbit, passing that passion on. My son, Bodie, we started kokanee fishing last year. And again, get criticized a little bit for that, you know, but such a hoot because he's young, right? So we're out there. We start super early in the morning, right when it's getting light, and he brings a blanket and we clip it to the windshield and then to the chair, and he creates this little fort, right? Mm-hmm. And him and my lab go sleep or hang out in that fort. And when that rod goes off, they're clicker reels, and it's fun, you know, because you're going along, you know, and it'll usually when they first hit, it goes click, click. And you know, you look around and then click, 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 and that blanket flies off, the hooks go flying, right. and he comes flying up and he's looking for the rod.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, you got that on the one side, then you've got the other side again, going back to the small town where, hey, we got too many. There's too many people hunting. There's too many people fishing. There's too many boats on the water. The boat launch is a mess. The populations are down. And for you guys who make a living, you know, introducing people or making people better at what they do, that's got to be tough. That's got to be a tough balance.
It is a really tough balance. But again, going forward, the way I look at these things, we are not going to get any smaller. We're not going to go backwards. Helena is going to grow. Montana, take it how you want it,
sure,
is going to grow. We do have an incredible, just like you mentioned, the outdoors here is incredible. We have 3 lakes right here in Helena, all within 20 minutes to a boat ramp. People are going to utilize that. And the way I look at it is if you can help people, get everybody on the same page, it's going to benefit all because we're not going to be going backwards. More people are going to be getting out there. So we're just going to do our best to help them. And, you know, everybody can enjoy the waterways.
And you carve out your own little niche, too. I've been fishing since about age 5. I actually have more productivity now than I did when I was younger. The fishery, the fishing game has taken very good care of these fisheries and these three lakes here. And even with the increased pressure, which my early days fishing the gates of the mountains, we'd put in at daylight, get back at dark. There were days where I would go clear to the main lake with a 14-foot boat, and I carried 12 gallons of fuel because my 6-gallon can would always run out about Coulter Campground. I'd have to switch gas in the dark. But there were days I would go all the way to Main Lake Coulter and out and never see a vessel. Mm. And now, I mean, if you did that same trip, you would see hundreds of boats. But yeah, the fishing is still sustained and really good fishery. You know, I have not seen any impact from increased pressure that hinder my days on the water.
Now, as far as that goes with other guides, other fishermen in Montana, I've seen this firsthand. There was a point in time where when I lived in Great Falls, I was and I wasn't fishing for walleye at that time at all. And I was the MC though of the Walleye Unlimited banquet every single year in Great Falls for years.
That's awesome.
And it was 1,200 people. It was enormous, and it was a big, big event. And I was like, man, I thought this was a trout fishing state. I had no idea that sort of passion and that sort of population of people were that into walleye fishing. And across the street at the same night, they would always have it the same night, there was a Trout Unlimited banquet going on, and it was much smaller. Much smaller. And I thought, that's interesting, the size of them. Mm-hmm. But I also found out there was like Team Walleye, yep, versus Team Trout. Now, you guys, as you said, multi-species guides, you guys specialize in both. Do you find yourselves ever kind of the target of guys going, oh, what are you doing with those trout? You know, you're supposed to be walleye. We got to get those trout out of here. We should be throwing them on the banks. And the same guys on the other side are going, we should throw every walleye out of the Missouri chain. Yeah. This is a trout fishery.
And that's, I guess, here's where I come from and loving this state and having the passion for it. I love everything that swims in our waterways, and I'm intrigued by everything that swims in our waterways, and they do coexist. I used to fish below Holter Dam tons in the 70s, and there were walleyes, lots of giant walleyes down there. And they have not hindered that trout population one bit down there. But you will talk to some people on the Lower Mo, and they will say, yeah, that, you know, just what you said, get them out, mm-hmm, of here.
Right.
But they've coexisted forever. The trout numbers every year but one in the last 20 years have increased in number, the catchable trout numbers per mile. So it's a coexistence that just works. And being multi-species angler like Trevor and I are, we know every fish in the water and how to target them. And you have a better overall knowledge of the entire waterway when you do that. You understand how the whole system works and how it works together. They're all symbiotic. They all eat other fish. They all do their thing, but you target them in different waters. So it's just a fun way to be. You're very universal.
And, you know, when I first started, I butt heads a little bit with, like, the, you know, lower river guys, the Mighty, mm-hmm, Mo, you know, killing all the big walleye and this and that. But over time, I've kind of became I've created quite the harmony with both sides. I kind of just meet right in the middle. I don't sway one side too far or the other. I lived most of my life, I guess what you'd call probably walleye or die. You know, that's all I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, elk hunting and walleye, nothing else in the world mattered. You know, now that, right, I've had kids and I've gotten older, you know.
You fill a freezer with those two things and do pretty well.
Yes, you could.
That's not a bad day.
Pretty good, man. Let the trout go.
You're eating good.
Yeah, they taste like socks. You don't need them. It's fine.
But no, I really do meet in the middle. And it's funny, like I said, I kind of bumped heads with some of the lower river guys. And then, but same thing, same with some of those walleye guys. You know, they get so radical on their end as well, that, you know, I've kind of tried to bring harmony to both those sides. Obviously, it's not everybody's going to get on board with that, but I've really done my best to kind of, like Dad said, let them know that they can coexist. We can come together and all kind of just be fishermen in these waters. But yeah, it's funny when you mentioned the whole, oh, get those trout out of here. Once in a while, I'll have a client that's like straight walleye, you know, and they'll get a trout on and they're like, oh, that slimy frickin', you know.
You know, it is different how you view a trout when you catch one when you're targeting walleye. I'm a trout guy from the get-go, always have been, grew up, got into fly fishing, I did it all, and now if I go out and I'm targeting walleye, I'm like, what is that?
That is that hilarious.
Get that 5-pound rainbow off of my line there. I need to
ruin my worm.
So, So true. Truer words couldn't be spoken, Scott.
Now see that, and that's a strange thing. And Scott and I have gotten to know each other over the last, you know, 7-8 years. You know, growing up in the Great Lakes, you went fishing. You can catch what you catch. It might be perch, it might be a largemouth, smallmouth. You could catch walleye, you catch whitefish, which they're different than whitefish here.
Lake whitefish.
Yeah. You know, you get into all kinds of lake trout and things like that. But I mean, it was not. It was fish.
It swims, man. It tugs, right?
Go catch fish. Yeah. And then it was interesting coming out here and realizing we had a Bloods and Crips situation going on. Yeah. You know, like, these trout guys are like, walleye. I'm like, have you ever had one? Yeah. Man, they're delicious. What are you turning up your nose to that for? Like, yeah. he was like, making fun of me. He's like, what are you going to do with perch? I'm like, well, you got to catch about 20 of them, but they're great. You know, and that was a whole new thing to me, because you know, you never knew. You know, you go out and a little bit more targeted my trips to Alaska.
Yeah,
you know, you're out there looking for kings, you catch a lingcod, you get mad. But yeah, it was a different level of animosity,
right?
You know, you see the trout unlimited people, and then the walleye guys come out and they got their own derbies and they don't like each other and they won't park behind your boat. And
I just don't understand that, because I look at all the basics and you'll see the purists that are strictly fly fishermen, and then like the walleye guys are spin rod stuff, and then some people will chastise the little old lady year old guy sitting in a lawn chair throwing a worm and marshmallow out. And,
right.
And here's the way I look at it. I break it all down, and everybody's doing their own thing, and that thing they're doing is making their heart happy, or you wouldn't be doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I would never chastise anyone. The little old guy with the worm and marshmallow on, his heart's as happy as mine when I'm throwing a fly stick.
Yeah, and they're outdoors doing
something. Yeah, I mean, they're right. Just, and so I look at it in a happy heart way. It's like, I have no right to tell somebody they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. You know, I love to see them out there and just enjoying nature.
Well, you know, there's also an aspect of that whole thing about the divisiveness, which is crazy in fishing. I agree with you, Kit. And I see people out there in the spring, and it makes you cringe sometimes when you see somebody drag a fish up the rocks and then they release it again. And like, that's not great for a trout, things like that. But you find yourself in that mindset, but you got to tell yourself once in a while, I'm the one here who needs to adjust what I'm doing, not them. And then, but there is a whole second version of this with just guides on one particular body of water, and it is insane when you're gonna get little inside information on the drama and the politics and the soap opera that is the guiding industry when these guys see each other every day. Mm-hmm. Part of them is competition because of business wise, and another aspect is different fishing styles and different you know, philosophies about it. You guys have been here so long, there's got to be some sort of a grandfather clause effect of respect with you guys. And I think that I've heard that a little bit, like, you know, there's very few people out there who've been on the water as long as you, especially Kit. And that aspect of it is just kind of a good position to be in.
Right. And I'm pretty humble about what I've done. And I guess my passion for the state of Montana and what it offers me supersedes anything that goes on.
You got to be over it by now. All of that other stuff.
And I came out of the corporate world, and I'll just share this is, I have a lot of founded thoughts from the corporate world. And in the corporate world, at director level, you learn really rapidly that you don't have time to concern yourself with what other people are doing, because if you do, it's deterring from your productivity. And then we came, after 35 years with the same company, I moved on, and Trevor and I got our charter captain licenses, and the tackle business was growing like crazy, and so it was a good transition. And I came into the guiding world, and it was like, whoa, I was aghast, because I've never seen more people concern themselves with other people and what they're doing in that world. And again, I'm founded with, I just don't have time to get caught up in that, because it deters from my day and my productivity. And so we just go out there, carve out our own niche. Some people might complain about something you do, and it's just let it run off. It's not going to hurt me.
Yeah, I agree completely. And
that's healthy as all day.
Oh, yeah. No, right. And I think Dad has, not in a bad way, but I think Dad has a much greater respect out there and in general than I do myself. And again, I don't mean this in a negative way.
Back to the red thong thing.
Exactly. I mean, that and, I don't know. Did you guys ever see the ice fishing picture?
I've seen it all.
Over the perch?
I've seen it all.
All right, turn it off.
I had to take that picture.
Pa over. But Dad has been on the water, you know, fourth generation here. I'm fourth generation here, but basically since the beginning of time. And a lot of the outfitters, and it doesn't matter, but some of that is, you know, they'll point to their boat number and be like, I'm outfitter 37. You know, I'm the second outfitter ever in the state of Montana. Which does definitely mean something, but Dad has been fishing just as long or longer than them. He just wasn't an outfitter, you know, but so he has that respect. I definitely have respect. I just think I'm kind of new to it, you know, so I'm kind of the, you know, the young punk, they call it, right? You know, I mean, that's basically the way I'd look at it, but I just do my own thing, just like Dad. I sit out there in my boat in the morning. Those guys, you know, a lot of the guys are all dressed up and, you know, waders or whatever they're going to do. And I'm mostly doing my big boat. So I'm in board shorts and Air Jordans, you know, just Grateful Dead shirt, you know, just hanging out.
Not a Sims logo to be found.
Yeah, right. No, I'll throw some Sims on. But no, it's really the best thing you can do is just to do your own thing. But believe it or not, I get along with every single outfitter and guide out there. I mean, sure, there's been little things here or there, like, oh my gosh, you guys kept that 23-inch trout to let that kid take home and eat. And it's a hatchery fish. It's a put and take fishery. Mm-hmm. I'm not going out there and keeping 10 every time we go, but I'm definitely going to let a kid keep a hatchery trout if they want to go home and cook it. But we've really, again, found that harmony. It's worked out really well. And yeah, you just do your own thing. The one thing about the guides is that I personally believe is a recreational fisherman. And some of them will believe this and some will disagree, but I always believe that a recreational fisherman has more authority and right to be there than I do. You know, some of these guys, I think just because it's commercial, because they're making money, they like, you know, get the heck out of my way. I'm working today. Like I have to catch fish.
Right.
There's a lot more water. So I'm very respectful to the general public just because, you know, again, I'm blessed to have this job that I have. And I really think they have the utmost belonging out there.
You have to keep in mind, if you're out guiding, you get clients on the boat. It's about their day. That should be first. And if you're going to get into a bickering argument across the boat, the bow of the boat with some other guide or another recreational fisherman, you're ruining their day.
Absolutely.
And it's your job to enhance their day. And that always amazes me that a guy would be willing to do that on the river. And I've seen it. And I'm like, why would you even do that? You got people in your boat who are paying to be there.
So honestly, I've actually... Here in Montana, I have not seen that myself, but I was out at Buoy 10 2 years ago where the Columbia meets the ocean.
Oh, boy.
And we're talking
some fights happening out there.
I've heard about that.
Like, it's bumper boats, man.
Yeah,
and this guide boat came by us, and I'm just with my buddies. We're recreational fishing. And this guide boat comes by, and there's this kid that hooks this fish. And, he's having the other clients reel in, and he's fighting this fish, and, you know, he's pumping the rod up and then putting slack in it when it goes down, right? And this big king falls off. And this guy just tears into this kid.
Oh, no. Like,
rips him a new one. And this kid was almost in tears. He sat down and, like, everybody in the boat looked terrified. And I'm thinking to myself, the kid's probably never even fished.
They've all been fishing with my buddy Nelly.
Right.
That's how
it
works.
You didn't even tell him what to do. So it shows you that, like, holy cow, that really is out there. But luckily here, I've never seen that. And in our boats, we always have a lot of fun.
And for another reason, we hold our heads a little bit higher because of the Kids Tackle logo on our boats. And that stature, because you're looked at from everyone. Not only are you a guide out there, but you own Kids Tackle.
We
want to represent it really well.
Yeah.
And so we just try to stand above a lot of that stuff. And there are days you would like to say something, but you just, you don't.
Right. I'd be bad at that.
You're not going to educate somebody by saying something anyway.
Exactly right.
And Scott said it perfect. You got to remember that you have clients in your boat.
Yeah.
Your job is to show them an incredible time. And if you're in a bad mood or you're chuckling off to somebody or something like that, that's not fair to them whatsoever in any shape or form.
Well, and I have fished Washington a little bit. And Buoy 10 is to Canyon Ferry as bum fights is to the UFC. No. Like, that place is nuts. nuts.
I saw some stuff there.
You
see those memes on Facebook where the girl walks into the gym and they're doing all that different weird stuff. You know, like you could do an incredible meme out there on buoy 10 because there's 15-foot waves. Yep. We're in a 30-foot boat and I'm scared. And I look over to the side and here's this dude in a 12-foot aluminum boat with his two kids sitting in the front holding on so they won't flip over backwards in the waves. Yep. And he's not trying to get off. He's just trolling off into the sunset. You know, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, you end up with a lot of lines tangled in a lot of radio antennas out at that joint, man. Yeah. It is nuts.
Yep, yep.
Now, as we wrap up here, because we've kept you guys almost an hour, we've talked almost not at all about the company. kitstackle.com if you want to see what you guys are doing, because the thing I think, because you've got the guided trips and, of course, the jigs, which goes without saying, and Scott and I both fish a ton of them. The thing that comes through in talking to you is just how authentic your approach to the business is, especially for you. I mean, it's coming from a place of pure love.
Yep.
And the fact that you've been able to maintain, I hope I live long enough to get to your level of mental health, because the things that you're saying make perfect sense and I am completely incapable of living that way. It's like, yeah, you should just let stuff slide off. What do you care if people are like, no, I'm going to go stab that son of a,
Right, right. But I think, again, that does come with time though. I think.
You're not there either?
No.
Okay, good.
Nope.
Good.
Nope.
How old are you?
41.
Okay, perfect. There's still time then.
Yep. I get very angry hunting, but it's like fishing, I am fine. It's my zen place. I'm good. Hunting, I am now into the angry stage because of my own lack of success and because I'm the world's worst elk hunter, and I've just had to embrace that over time. And people have told me, no, you're not. And I'm like, if we were in a court of law, I could prevent the evidence. I would win this case every single time. But I do appreciate kind of that mental health aspect of it, because there's so many people now, it's so easy to fall into the other side of it,
right?
That I mean, that's what you're looking for, and I think that is a if you're choosing a guide, I think that's something that I would absolutely be after if I'm going to go fishing someplace like Montana, someplace else where I'm going to go and I'm going to be the new person, I'm going to be the client. You got to have that. I think it's really, really important now.
Okay. I was chatting with some people the other day that have started a website to entice people to come to them, and then they will search out outfitters to give trips to in the guiding industry. And this, the question of getting nervous on the water came up as a guide. And it's like, I don't ever get nervous. You know, I watch these young guides get nervous and they're running hither and yon and up the river and back down the river. And it's like, no, I just do what I do and I'm patient and I know it's going to come around. And when you're running up and down the river, clients know that you're insecure and you just don't know what's happening. And you don't fish as well as you would. It's just being calm and patient and let your clients know it's coming, and you just don't get nervous. You've done it your whole life. And so you just know the fishery so well.
Well, yeah, it's better to catch 4 fish and not get barked at all day like the poor kid on the boat.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to catching 10 fish and then the guide's got the pictures for his Facebook page. It doesn't make any sense. You're in it for the client.
Yes.
Yeah, the other cool thing here too is we do have a pretty friendly fishery. I mean, anywhere can be tough. But here, if you know what you're doing, you're going to catch fish. And it's fun. It's awesome. It did take me a while, though. I was definitely the guy puking in the garbage can before my first trip. I'm human,
Putting pressure on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, even though it's what you've done your whole life, you know you're good at it, but you go out with buddies or your dad or yourself, and then all of a sudden you have paying clients, right? So, that adds a whole another dimension to it. So, yeah, for my first year, I would get so terrified before my trips that I'd puke in a garbage can. And once I got through that first year and started doing some trips, I basically, instead of okay, by 9 o'clock, I got to be here. Then I got to go do this. And now I just go out and I fish and I don't even worry about it. And we have successful days. We have fun. But yeah, you're human. I mean, I think everybody would have that nervousness to get started. But now, no worries. Just go out and have fun. And it's awesome.
See, now imagine taking somebody out and not having any idea what you're doing, and that's me with my son.
You would catch fish.
And he's looking at me going, where are the fish? I'm like, if I knew, we'd be there. I can't imagine. It's a ton of pressure to take. And again, going back to what Scott said right off the bat, there is that inherent risk when you take a true passion, something you really love in your heart, and you once it becomes commodified, it becomes commercialized, you run a real risk of either losing the love for it or finding uglier sides to it you didn't know existed when it was just something for funsies. But man, it sure sounds like you guys have got it pretty dialed in.
Yeah, the guiding for me enhances that passion because I get to share it daily. You know,
You're the healthiest person I've ever met.
No, I mean, it does, though. It's like I get to share all the things I've done in this wonderful state with people that have never done any of it. And the next day I get to do it again. And it's kind of like this podcast. You start here and you don't know where it's going to go, but you're sharing all day long your love of the state and they feel it. When it comes from the heart, people feel it.
He does have that zen though. I mean, we'll be sitting out there. I'll get out there what I think is plenty early. And I get there. And again, I don't get nervous now, but I'm very
He's already on his second cup of coffee 100 yards offshore.
Yeah, no, he's still waiting in line because the gate doesn't open until 7:30. But he's just kicked back, drinking his cup of coffee, listening to the birds chirping, right? Yeah. I mean, and obviously all his stuff is already ready to go. Of course, my stuff's not ready to go till I get there. But no, I still go to the water with a seriousness, but a fun seriousness. So when I say I just go fish now and I don't worry about it, I do worry about it. Like, I'm going to put you on fish, but I don't get that severe worked up and, oh my God, are we going to catch fish? Are we going to catch fish? I have gotten past that and I've been able to get to the point where I go out there with everything rigged right. I know we're going to have a great day. Everything is set up good. And then we just go have fun and fish and it just happens. It works. I feel like I'm just out there having fun, but you get all the time at the end of the day, they're like, holy cow, man, you're running. You were baiting two hooks at once and still turning the motor and you're netting my fish over here. And that's just what I do. But you hear that all the time. People are like, man, like, do you have eight arms? Like, do you bleed green? You know, so, but that was a great point of when you transition something that's a passion and a hobby into a business, that can be tricky.
There's a risk.
There's a huge risk. I would say on the guiding side of things, it has been absolutely incredible. I have loved it. It is probably, just like Dad said, enhanced my passion because all I ever knew is going out and me wanting to catch fish for me or my buddies. Now, my goal is to catch fish for people that may be experienced, may not be experienced. So it adds this whole different dimension and level to it, which keeps it fresh and fun. And the jig making has been incredible too. Dad sits right outside the paint room tying. I'm in there painting. We've listened to a million albums together. You know, every once in a while the door will crack open and Dad will be like, hey, you remember that one time? And we'll sit there and bust out laughing, you know? So it's been incredible. And again, it's just what I know. And we get that all the time. People are like, you're so lucky. You know, and it's all I've ever known. It's my best friend. But for us, I think we were able to turn and take a passion and turn it into something that we still love, which, again, you don't think about it, but I think we're pretty fortunate.
That's a great way to spend the off season for guides. The off season is sometimes tough to get through and mm-hmm. you got to find something to do. You guys have got the business side of this and you've got that aspect of it, getting ready for the next season with the jig making, doing the business side of that, getting all that buttoned up. You've got plenty of stuff to do during the off season. So it's a really, really good balance that way in the two sides of the business.
It is. There's not much idle time. You know, I tie every day of my life, and it's my second favorite thing in life is tying flies. It's a mindless task kind of bit. You can just daydream and tie flies, and you're producing something that's of quality and beautiful, and it's something that's going to allow someone else to harvest a fish.
And who is it that looks at a loaf of Wonder Bread and goes, I've got an idea for a new color? I figured that was Trevor.
Yeah. It's been everyone, you know. It's like our best selling jig of all time, the Disco Lemonade, purple over chartreuse.
I couldn't get them they were nowhere to be found.
Yeah, that right. So it like creates this demand because like we don't have like we're not getting these things shipped over from China, man. Like I'm painting these things and Dad's tying them, you know. Yeah. So that's why they've got like the aircraft grade quality and whatnot. But all the names over the years have I think almost been as important as the jig itself. And Disco Lemonade, I mean, even that one, for example, I was sitting there listening to music. I was going through the radio stations and...
Well, 90s alternative rock there.
Exactly. And that Sex and Candy song came on.
Marcy Playground.
Marcy Disco Playground. Lemonade.
I had those guys in studio.
No kidding?
I've been doing this for so long, soul.
See, I secretly owe them royalties, right? Well, I'm not even a big fan of that song, right. But I hadn't heard it for like 15 years. Yeah. So I'm like, well, what the hell, you know? And it's like, and Disco Lemonade. And for some reason, I was like... That'd be a good jig name. I mean, there's a Disco Lemonade, right? So it's like, I really think like the names have been almost as important as the actual jig themselves. Going back to that whole community feel, or like being part of Kids Tackle, being part of the team, part of the aura, part of just that whole living, breathing thing. It's a branding.
Yeah. Just brands that jig with that name. And it's like, it's pretty cool.
Wonder Bread's the new one, by the way.
Yeah, no, I can see it with the three dots. I'm looking right at it.
Yeah, and that one was pretty funny. When I did the Wonder Bread, I had totally even forgotten about the movie, right? And then somebody sent me that meme, you know, about peeing excellence, you know, and I'm like, oh, we can use this. Right. So, and it just kept going off that.
Ricky Bobby.
Yeah. You're not first, you're last.
Well, I mean, thank you both for coming in and sharing this with us. We will include all the links. You can go to kitstackle.com, find them on social media. Well, we will put that all in the show notes so that people can link directly to it. Before we let you go, though, you know, what are you working on next? Because I imagine there's always something in the back of your head.
Right, there is always something in the back of my head. Right now, as far as what's next, is absolutely nothing but being buried in Wonder Breads.
So just pain.
We're going to be making a lot of Wonder Breads. But again, the ice is off. Last Sunday, I cleaned my boat. It's a refreshing feeling. It's always a nice reset, like when spring starts to come. Like yesterday was the first time I heard robins. Robins were in my backyard, and it's kind of like that reminder. Next will be the meadowlarks, which is my favorite bird, but it's kind of a nice time of year. You know, things are starting to pick back up. The guidance is going to start coming. The jig orders are coming in. About to have fun. Living the dream, jigging the dream.
And we're talking all this, and all I'm thinking about is whether or not the doctor will clear me to cast a line. Yeah. Right now, I can't do anything. It's killing me.
Sit on a boat.
It's absolutely killing me. Well, thank you both for coming in. Appreciate it a great deal. Make sure, once again, that you rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever it is that you found it. Follow all of the links and find these guys. If you're headed to Montana, you're listening from out of state, you're coming into the Helena area, you got to come out and find Kit and Trevor. Be a part of what they're doing. This was really fun, guys. Thanks a ton.
Can't thank you guys enough. This was an absolute blast. Thank you for having us.
We appreciate it. We'll be back next week.